that time, there was still women in creative departments, but not in any meaningful way.
Clear the mothballs from your ear caves and get ready for an episode that will tap dance on your brainstem when you meet Jacqueline Crowley, the Whedon and Kennedy vet and creative director behind award-winning work for brands like HBO, Delta, Duracell, and AT&T.
There's two ways to define a voice, and one is...
In 2019, Jacqueline led and helped win Whedon and Kennedy, New York's largest client win in its history, McDonald's Global. Before that, she got her start as an art director at Bozzelle, where she focused on the infamous Got Milk campaign. More recently, she led Anomaly New York as chief creative officer.
But then if you find yourself surrounded by people who genuinely don't want to listen to what you have to say, it's okay to, like... I was out to dinner with Jonathan a couple weeks ago, and he's like, "You think you've reached your full potential?" And I was like, "Fuck, definitely not." And the truth of it is, you carry that shit with you, whether you like it or not.
Join Jacqueline Crowley and former Whedon and Kennedy ECD Jason Bagley on the latest episode of Bagley Talks to an Important Person.
Well, it's your lucky day, you headphone-wearing bastard, because Jason Bagley's podcast is here. Oh, yeah. He's gonna interview the most important person, so shut your mouth and f***ing open your ears. Yes, it's Jason's podcast. The best shit you can get anywhere. And if you pay a f***ing attention, you'll get your f***ing mind blown. But I should probably tone it down, cause Jason Bagley wouldn't want me to swear. Yes, it's Jason Bagley's podcast, baby. You better get out your notebook and your pen. He'll interview a motherfucking important person. God damn it, I did it again. It's Jason's podcast, here we go.
All right, Jacqueline Crowley, welcome to Bagley Talks to an Important Person. You are so important that you are one of the first people that I invited to be on my podcast a long time ago, and you have shut me down and put me off, and it has taken a long time to make this happen, but here we are trying to be important on Bagley Talks to an Important Person.
Thank you for being one of the first. I'm sorry about all that.
It's okay. We're finally here. Let's tell a little bit, a slight backstory of our relationship. You interviewed to work on Old Spice years ago, and then we saw each other very occasionally when I was in New York. But then when I left Whedon and Kennedy and was freelancing, I got a call to work for this certain brand. I'm like, "Hey, so can I bring a partner?" And like, "Oh no, we actually have a partner already, so that you'd have to be okay with that." I saw that email. I was like, "Oh no, I'm going to turn this down." And they're like, "It's Jacqueline Crowley." "Oh, awesome. I'm in." And so then we ended up being partners on this freelance project for how long was that?
Oh my God, it was awesome. I think it was like November to March or something.
It was pretty long, and
it was really long, and we ended up being a huge disappointment, both of us.
Yeah, we majorly let everyone down. I think we presented a lot of good ideas. They just wanted to go in a different direction. That's the story I tell myself.
obviously, it's the only story.
But I had a blast. It was so much fun. I felt like I was just hanging out with my buddy every day over Zoom. Yes. And you are a super fun person to work with.
Thanks.
And very talented. So that's why you're here. You were tested. The whole thing was a test to see if you would be on the podcast that didn't exist, not even in my mind at that point. And you passed the test.
That's so good. You did ask me, and I'm glad we've had all this time together. And I think part of the reason I've been kind of kicking like can on doing it is like, you're like, "Yeah, I got Andy Legnar and Baldwin," and I'm like, "Oh my God, those are like legit, in my opinion, creative rock stars." So I'm like, "That's I'm not an important person. Do I belong on this podcast?" And then, as you were explaining it to me, and how you like want to reach out to young emerging talent, I was like, "I feel like I could help in some way." And so that's what today's going to be about, because it's for me, it's like less about the work I've done, though I'm super proud of a lot of the work I've done, but sort of a little bit about how kind of hard it's been in a good way, you know, to get to where I am now.
Well, I knew that you would be a massive help, and you are definitely a rock star, and I don't know why you would ever think you weren't, but should we just get the forehead situation out of the way? I think we need to address this. Everyone's already thinking it. Let's just get it out of the way.
Let's do it.
Jacqueline has an amazing forehead, and it points out, it highlights the fact that mine is the size of Australia. And yeah. Let's look. Everyone was thinking it. Let's get it out of the way. Okay, we've acknowledged it. We know it. You don't have to leave comments about it. Yeah. This is just, it's already there. So she has a great face. I don't. Mine is quite red. And the forehead is a greater mass than the entire rest of the face. And Jacqueline has a good forehead. We get it. That's the way it is.
But you could tell yourself this. Like, you're getting a little older now and you still have a lot of hair. So that's a good thing, right?
Imagine how big my forehead would be without that hair. It would just go on and on forever. Okay, we've addressed that. So tell us real quick where you're at now. What are you doing? Are you still at Anomaly? What's happening?
Yeah, I'm in ECD at Anomaly. What's kind of cool is I've been always super honest about my goals and kind of my priorities. And so we're kind of working out a situation where I can be sort of a resident ECD, but maybe pare back some of my projects and assignments so I better suit, you know, my needs at home, which is pretty cool. And I actually think, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, pre-COVID, that wouldn't even be a consideration for most agencies. And I love how now you can just speak openly about what you can and can't do. And just, it's wonderful. So that's what I'm doing. And it's been awesome. That's where I am.
That's great.
Yeah.
That is great. Well, I know we don't have a ton of time, so I want you to just get into sharing your wisdom and the deck that you've very generously prepared.
So, Jason, I was saying to you, like, and you're like, oh, I'm not fishing for compliments, but I don't really particularly, like, think I've had a, like, prolific creative career, but I also am completely kind of okay with that, maybe even great with that, because I started in 2002, and at that time there was still women in creative departments, but not in any meaningful way, like a little bit just to keep some seats warm, and if maybe you had like a female account, the belief back then was only females could work on female stuff, and you know how it goes. So it was a really slow start for me.
Yeah.
Plus I hadn't gone to a portfolio school. My parents like had like zero money in the first place. So sending me to Syracuse University was like a huge imposition. And to have like raised my hand and be like, can I also go to a second school, would have been a hard no. Not to say, I know a lot of people put themselves through those schools and I have a ton of respect for that. But I had to like dive in with a pretty iffy education in advertising from Syracuse. I went to Syracuse mostly for fine arts, like painting. Realized quickly that that was not going to work out, and found advertising. So all that
we share that background, by the way. I had a pretty bad advertising education, and then couldn't really afford to go to portfolio school. So.
It was kind of bad because right when we started, there was just like all these incredible talents coming out of those schools, and it was hard to compete. But I know that while it's become a little bit better for women, there's new voices and new people from different backgrounds, thankfully, coming to the table. I was like, well, maybe if I do this cool podcast with you, some of the insights I have could help them too. So I guess so. I started this with, dear young creative, I want you to move faster than I did. God, I don't mean to be sad. I'm not sad. I must sound like I'm sad. I was out to dinner with Jonathan a couple of weeks ago, and he's like, you think you reached your full potential? And I was like, definitely not. And he was like shocked. He's like, well, you worked at all these great agencies and you've got this great title. And I think the reason is it just was so slow at first. And it took me a really long time to get opportunities and gain confidence. So I hope that we're all going to struggle in our own way, but I hope we can start to eliminate some of the obstacles for people that keep them going at like 5 miles per hour in advertising.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe we would just talk about finding your voice. And I think you kind of touched on this in some of your other interviews, but I kind of mean it in a bit of a different way, I think. So I have these corny segue slides, but to have a voice, you need an ear. And for some of us, that can be really, really hard. So these are two compliments in quotes that I received in my younger years of advertising. First one here is, I'm glad you guys are here. This was in a review I was having with my partner, who was also a female. I'm glad you guys are here. There isn't a lot of talented women in advertising. And this was said by like a pretty famous chief creative officer. And I'm not trying to be sensationalist by saying famous. It feels like almost like a U.S. whatever, like a People
News
magazine.
U.S. News and World Report.
Yeah. Why that's there is because I guess I want to just emphasize that these were like widely accepted views by pretty prominent, influential people. And oddly, it felt like a compliment at the time. But now, as an older, you know, a fully formed adult in advertising with years under my belt, I'm like, holy shit, that was massively fucked up, you know, to have that said to us. And the other one was, I'm surprised you are so smart because you are so girly. And this was said to me after a pretty big meeting for one of the clients that I was helping sort of be a senior talent on. And again, holy shit, this was an accepted thought. And the reason I wanted to bring it up is, you know, not to complain. This is my WAG gift, because I know a lot of people, you know, have bigger problems with this, might even be hearing worse things, probably are hearing worse things. But more because I think there's this expectation that if you've heard these things, if you have a lot of people who are doubting you, like culture says, like rise to the task and shake it off, right? And like, here's your runway, go. And the truth of it is, you carry that shit with you, whether you like it or not, right? So, I guess if it's helpful for anybody to hear, still now, I hear that shit all the time in my head. You know, it's not something that just because you get better titles, it just goes away. Maybe gets a little quieter. So don't feel bad if it bothers you, or if maybe it's getting in the way of the work. But, you know, at the same time, it's really important everyone hangs in there, and you are needed, right? And you have to do your best to just shut it out.
And Jacqueline, I think that's an amazing kind of background story. And I think probably so many people have heard things like that, you know, women in particular. What do you think the balance is? Because I really don't know. I'm a dude. What's the balance of acknowledging that it does impact people, and those anytime that somebody, you know, says a negative stereotype, it's gonna, to some extent, it's gonna get in your head. But at the same time, you can't let it, you can't help that it's going to get in your head, But you have to find a way to sort of get past it and don't let that limit you and don't let that dominate your beliefs about yourself. And how did you do that? Because I don't feel like you were, what I'm trying to get at is because these things are more acceptable to talk about now and to point out, which I think is a positive thing. I've also seen the negative side of that where people allow it to become such a big deal that it becomes a limiting belief that these things are stopping me from becoming, and you have not allowed that to happen, even though you experienced
it. No, but what I guess I'm telling you is, I think a couple things. One is, it is still a limiting belief for me. Like, to this day, I'll look at an edit and I'll be like, I will see a decision that I decided not to raise my hand on, and I was right. Now, first of all, I'll tell you, that happens to all of us all the time. You know what I mean? That's part of being creative. You want to, you know, share ideas, and you're not going to love all of them, right? But I would be willing to bet it happens more for me than maybe somebody else. So that's the reality. And by the way, it's not true for everybody. Like, I don't think, right? I see peers that are my friends that I've grown with, women who I don't think deal with it in the way that maybe I do. So it's not the same for everybody. But I probably represent the faction of people that, you know, maybe have a harder time shaking it. I think it's just there's probably better sources than myself who've really like thought about this and come up with tools and tips. I do have a few that I can talk through today. That's why I'm here. But I think it's just, you just have to become an expert at parsing out what's bullshit and what's not, you know, and you have to interrogate those moments really closely. And yeah, over time you get better and better at it. So I just think, you know, you also have to be careful, Jace. I think you probably have seen this in your, you know, ECD role wide, and like you there's this sort of belief that just because you've opened the door, everything will be fine now. It's like, you have the floor. Say what you want, do what you want. And it's like, yeah, but you don't understand, I've been indoctrinated in a really hard way. You know what I mean? So it's going to take a minute. Like, I used to get frustrated. It's like, but Jack, don't think that. It's your decision to make. And it's like, yeah, but that's not, you know, that's after 20 years of being told differently, yeah, you know? So, and I guess, you know, that's all kind of sad and negative, but I think really when you can be frank about this stuff, that's the only way you can make change, right? Like, why mince words about it? It is hard. It's not easy for everybody. But here's all that I learned a little late. So in the spirit of trying to maybe help anybody who's watching this and has made it this far and maybe having some of the, you know, that confidence, or maybe don't feel like their voice is being heard, here are some things that I've been doing over the last, I would say, 10 years, let's say, as I came in to become like a real art director, then CD, then ECD. So there's two ways to define a voice. And one is like just the tone, right? Like certain writers or art directors have a very specific tone. And I am talking about that, but more of what I'm talking about is confidence and finding your voice, you know, at your agency or in your group. And this is a sort of an unofficial chart that I drew. So if it helps, no one knows what they're talking about. Like, and I can promise you that. Like, I promise you, really, no one knows. On the extreme side here, you have like definite wrong answers, and those definitely exist. And then you have some definite right answers. And there are this like 1% of creatives who somehow always land at the right answer quicker. But like 90% of us, 99% of the time, are nowhere. We don't know what we're doing, what we're saying. And this goes for like your peers, you know, fellow creatives, all the way up to the people that are running the company. And I think the sooner that you can sort of believe that, because it's really true, the more confident you'll feel. I think the only thing anybody, just making sure I'm checking myself, the only thing that anybody actually ever really knows is if they've gleaned it from experience. Like, I've seen that before, and this is how it went. Those type of things are worth listening to. But most things are completely just someone's opinion. So if no one really knows what they're talking about, it might as well be you who knows what they're talking about. And honestly, like, I want to say I came to that conclusion myself, and I partially did, but I also found leadership that really wanted to listen to me. And I think probably the first time that I really felt confident to be the person that knew what they were talking about was probably with Carl and Neil. They were just like, okay, Jack, what do you have to say? So I do acknowledge, like, if you're at an agency, there's almost like this amount of time you're there just to learn, right? And just take it all in. But then if you find yourself surrounded by people who genuinely don't want to listen to what you have to say, it's okay to, like, be like, all right, I'm moving on now. Like, I've absorbed everything there is to absorb.
I want to share something really quick before we get back to the episode. On the back end of our YouTube channel, it says that more than half of you that watch this channel frequently haven't yet hit the subscribe button. I just wanted to ask you for a favor. It will help me continue to do these interviews if you choose to hit subscribe. So if I could ask you for one favor, if you're enjoying these interviews and you want me to continue to make this podcast, could you please hit that subscribe button? Or if you're listening on a podcast platform, would you do me the favor of hitting follow? Thank you in advance, and I will repay you by promising to continue to bring on amazing talent and to keep making the show better and better. Do we have a deal?
Knowing what you're talking about, believing what you're talking about, finding your voice. I swear to God, I'm not trying to, like, write a book and this is my pitch, because I'm going to say it's a lot. But to have a voice, believe in your idea with certainty, specificity and enthusiasm. I think it's as simple as those three things. And sort of how I, and I'll explain what those mean later, but sort of how I began to gain confidence in my voice is these things I'd call vibe walls. And they're better when you can be in an office. And I wish I had a picture of them. But there, I would just, like, do an entire office with just quotes and images for the brief. And I would let it kind of go haywire. And why that's really important, I think, if you're the kind of person who's like me, maybe you want to feel your way into a brief and not come in so harsh, is a wall. There's this, it instantly, like, you have a picture of Dolly Parton over here and, like, some Kenny Rogers quote over here, whatever it is, it's a discussion. It's a forum for discussion. It's less of, like, here's my script. Do you like the jokes I wrote in here? Like, that's, like, way, if you're feeling any doubt, that's, like, a really harsh entry into having your work evaluated with, like, hardcore ads. So I just started making these walls. And it really worked because I would bring in my partner. We'd make it together. I'd bring in maybe, like, the senior creative team on the account to get their opinion, if you have allies there. I'd bring in the account team. And, like, it became like a formal conversation before we went back and started making work. So I have, like, two examples of that. So for Duncan, right? That was a account. We pitched an anomaly and won. And it could be as simple as just images alone. So what we went, like, on a hunt for Duncan and all we thought it represented. And we kept coming back to Eggleston because of some principles that felt very Duncan about it. One is, like, working class America meets pop culture. And what's kind of great about doing this type of stimulus and research and grabbing reference is clients even like seeing this before you show them work to make sure you're all tracking it on the same page. And so when you, like, kind of start here in, like, this vibe space, then you can apply it to something really specific. So luckily they agreed with this, Duncan, and everyone was feeling it and excited. But they're like, well, specifically, like, food photography is a thing for Dunkin'. They're like, all right, well, so how do we apply that? So Wayne Thiebaud is like this pop artist, but represented like these working class diners, right? So you can get really specific in your idea now, because it's like, we thought, oh, it's really funny. Like, Dunkin' was doing all this food footage that was like flying coffees that would like end in kaleidoscopes. And we're like, what is that? What are you doing? And they hated that too. Like, what if your food footage looked like super blue collar journalistic captured of America, like these paintings? So I hope that makes sense, what I just said. Playing it back, I'm not sure it does, but like, if you start with like this, a really umbrella concept with wonderful reference that has an idea in it that represents the brand, everyone nods their heads, get confident, and then you can apply that thinking to specific briefs. And that method has really, really helped me. So I guess the thing I'm trying to say is, if you're creative and you're kind of stuck or you're not sure, your creative director doesn't necessarily want you come in with your ads. It's actually more important that you have an idea and a point of view, because it kind of just lands right to the ad later.
What do you think? I love your vibe walls, Jacqueline. I've only experienced them virtually, but as a writer, it's really inspiring to me, because one of the things that I love about having art director partners is they bring really cool visuals that I don't have or wouldn't think of, or don't have the level of taste to think of. And maybe I just haven't collected as many of them, and they can put them somewhere and it inspires me as a writer. It gives me, yeah. It makes me think of things. And also, a vibe wall automatically creates juxtapositions where you've got Dolly Parton over here, and then you got this, and you see it all at once, and you just naturally are gonna be like, oh, what if we mix Dolly Parton with this idea that's clear over here in the corner that wasn't supposed to be related? I just think it's a great way. I've done it myself with my art director partners, like Baldwin and I used to do this all the time, and I just think it's a fantastic way to like get interesting juxtapositions and smash things together that you wouldn't think of normally.
I'm just laughing because you actually did once see one of my walls in person. It was when we were pitching McDonald's.
Oh yeah, no, I remember that.
Well, the funny joke was, it was you, Baldwin, Carl, Neil, Dan Hill, and Colleen DeCourcy in the smallest room. And you go, you know what this meeting means? Needs more leadership. It was so awkward. Anyway, you're a funny guy.
Yeah, I was aware of how over-indexed we were and how awkward that probably was for the other people in the room.
The only other person was me, and it was awkward, so thanks for doing that. Anyways, so vibe walls, try it out if you haven't already. It's a good way to sort of test your voice and get sort of a consensus. And then just threw an example in here for writing. Like, just, I'm an art director. A lot of this stuff was written by my partner at the time, Al Mary, which is great. But sometimes I will just sort of scribble lines too on these walls. This is like work that was never made, but some of my favorite things we did. So we were pitching Tinder, and we had this like insight: Tinder can't claim to have the most marriages of any dating site, but it could claim to have the most marriages based on instant attraction and in a long-term relationship. That's super important. So we were kind of dancing around an idea. We couldn't find it. Here are some of the lines we wrote. Do you like dog shows? It doesn't matter. Don't settle for a companionship. End up with someone you still want to boink. And then kind of through all that language, which is our first stop with the team at large, was just really just those lines. And it was kind of enough, and it was messy. And then the next round, you know, we came back with our idea, which was Tinder, more marriages with actual sex in them. So, like, again, sometimes overconfidence is a bad thing, and it's good to just share how you're feeling, what you think the tone is before offering up a line. And so this is one of the lines that we put in front for the pitch. It was really fun. So that's one way. And then, you know, sorry, I've kind of been leaving out one of my main plots. So you start with vibe, but then you can get really, really specific, right? Specific, certain, and enthusiastic about your ideas. You have specific examples you can show that you think are dead on because you understand your idea. You can be really certain about them because you've already gotten the consensus of everyone, like your tone and your vibe is right. And then the enthusiasm, of course, is like the creativity. Yeah, it's kind of weirdly, I've for some reason won a lot of pitches more than anything else, right? And I think the enthusiasm is a huge part of that. Like, once you feel really certain about your thought, like, be positive. You know, someone else I think is just so good at this, I just recently worked with him, is Matt Sorrell. That guy has not seen a bad day in his whole life, I'm pretty sure. He'll come to meetings, like, once he's feeling good about the work and his idea, and it's like he's a joy to watch present ideas because he's doing fun. So I think that's a big part of it that you should.
I think that, yeah, that just before we move on from that, and I think you and Matt have that in common. One of the biggest things I get in my program is people want to know, like, how do I sell great work? And there's a lot of answers to that question. And I'm developing an entire program that's just about that right now. But the simplest thing is just enthusiasm. Like, if you do nothing else, you should figure out other techniques and other things that are really helpful. But if you do nothing else, just be enthusiastic about your great ideas, because that enthusiasm is contagious. It shows confidence. It makes the client feel confident in the work. If you don't show enthusiasm, if you just get up there and read a script and, you know, and just expect that they're going to understand how great this idea is, it doesn't show confidence to the client. It doesn't make the client feel like this is a great idea, or that you even feel it's a great idea.
No, it's 1,000%. Yeah. And it's kind of funny you say that, because sometimes I don't know what comes first in that equation, like the enthusiasm or if it's a good idea. You know what I mean? Like, and I actually think it eventually comes back around. You know what I mean? Like, even if what you're enthusiastic about isn't quite worked out, right? Your love for it is giving the people in the room the confidence to let it go another round. You know what I mean? Even if it's not quite there yet. I mean, that's pretty much every rough cut edit you'll ever have. It's like, here it is, first round. Like, oh good. You're like not trying to show the sign that, you know, this scene went on a few frames long, or maybe you have to get rid of that moment. But yeah, it's kind of funny how that works.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully you have an idea that can get there. If you're going to be enthusiastic about it, or else you're going to be like, there was a lot of enthusiasm and this thing never paid off.
Fuck yeah. I mean, that was scary. Don't do that. So I just thought it'd be funny, like, to talk about, like, everything is a brand. A lot of things out there are brands. Musicians, even, like, your favorite song. Like, the artist has a brand, and that's probably why you love them. And if it's not work, there's some examples out in culture of personas or brands or whatever that are this idea of like certainty, specific and enthusiastic and just kind of confident. So I was thinking about how like Beyonce is a funny example of someone who has a ton of confidence. She's certain in it. She's specific and she's enthusiastic. Like her whole brand started off as female empowerment, and just look at her, dance, like her choreography. It's so amazing and in your face and powerful. If it was anything else, it wouldn't work, right? Yeah. Like, then I was thinking about, like, just the way the Pope dresses. It's certain, specific, enthusiastic. Like, look at that hat. Like, the did not come to play, and how like if you wore anything else, it wouldn't work, right?
You're definitely all in with that hat.
You're all in, no questions asked. I think about like campaign lines of successful politicians, like "Yes, we can," and how incredible that platform was.
Yeah.
Like even reading the newspaper sometimes is a good way to measure what a good idea is, like by the headlines. Like if the headline is kind of soupy and you can't make sense of it, you don't believe it almost right away. Like the more pithy and clear and factual something is, the more you're on board, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then I was thinking how like very rarely in advertising can there be too much certainty or specificity or enthusiasm. And so this is a jingle. Jerry Graff loved jingles because they were so, and Jason, I always quote you and you don't remember these quotes. You're like, I didn't say that. I'm like, yes, you did. But this one, you said there's no subtlety in advertising, which is 100% true. It's okay. Like when you're in a room and you really believe in something, or if you like need to say things really plainly, if you can deliver it in a way that's convincing, that's awesome. You know? Yeah. Go on, Jace. Were you going to say something?
The world is not black and white. Almost nothing is black and white. People are not black and white. People are not all good and they're not all bad. But advertising needs to be black and white. Like subtlety and nuance don't work very well in advertising, and they don't work very well in selling advertising, and they don't work very well in leading advertising. Like if you're a leader, you have to be kind of black and white, and you have to be certain, even though I think that holds people back because they're like, but it's not that black and white and I'm not 100% certain. So I need to reflect the absolute accuracy of this situation by laying out all the nuanced facts, and it's like you lose. Just lost.
Yeah.
Obama didn't lay out all the nuance and all the things about "Yes, we can." He's just like, "Yes, we can. This is what we're doing. This is what I believe." And it's not that he was lying. He's choosing which part of reality he wanted to emphasize. And you have to do that. You have to do that as a leader. You have to do that when you're selling work. You have to do that in actual executions, or else it's not gonna hit home. Nuance doesn't have much of a voice. As soon as you start getting into like all the gray areas of anything, you tend to lose the personality and the voice of the conversation.
I think when you're not feeling confident in your point of view, you tend to nuance, to leave room for someone to like it, right? So you'll write 20 different headlines and bring them in versus the five you feel really good about. It's really weird. Like even as a kid in our state exams, I remember the answers in, you know, let's say history, their written section. The answers I felt really confident in were 10 sentences long. The ones I had no idea what I was talking about were like the front of the page, the back of the page, another page. And it's like, oh, I clearly don't have any confidence in this answer, right? Yeah. So like, I guess I would just say it's okay to like come in pretty sharp and strong. People appreciate it. It's okay to have your outside of advertising life be really pretty common. Like mine sort of like starts and ends at being a mom pretty much. And it's, I have to say that there's still a little bit of a stigma around that. Like, oh, say your mom, it's not super cool. It's not super interesting. It actually really is. And I started having a family when I was 30. So I've been doing this for a long time. And, you know, as a result, which I think I always was, but even more so now, like I'm a bit of a softy. I'm like more empathetic. But in the wise words of Dan, his whole thing was "move me, dude." And that kind of how I approach work. I'm like, I love a big feeling. I like a big, soft feeling. I even think big, soft feelings are in funny work. You know, they're just wrapped up a different way. So whoever you really are is fine. And maybe you already know that, whoever's out there right now probably does know that, but you don't need like some awesome side hustle to be good at advertising. Just do what you do. And it's kind of worked in my favor. Like one of my, and maybe you can cut it in later because it's a bit long, but like one of my favorite things I ever did was for this organization called NAMI. I know they support mental health of, you know, all different age groups, but for the holiday, they wanted to do something for kids. And, you know, we had this insight that there's no such thing as naughty or nice, because naughty behavior is usually a byproduct of, you know, a struggle. And so I don't think I would have come to that conclusion had I not been a mom, you know?
Yeah. I think it's a great point. I think I'm very uninteresting outside of work. And I think, I mean, I have a passion for floor care. I enjoy a good vacuum. I enjoy a good vacuum cleaner. I'm an early adopter in Dyson technology. But I think people underestimate how unique they really are, and that they're, that combination of seemingly boring things that they like, or the challenges they've had, or the interesting things they've been through, individually, all of those things might seem boring to them, but they combine together in a totally unique way that does give them an interesting point of view if they can tap into it, and if they can like let go enough and be vulnerable enough to kind of let that out and to try to do stuff that they really love and that they really think is great. I think almost everyone is interesting if they can do that. And almost no one thinks they are. Even the people that we think are so cool, they probably don't think they're that interesting. But we're all interesting if we can. We're the least interesting when we're not being vulnerable and honest about who we are. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think it's like everyone I think it's a natural tendency in advertising to always exist in like comparison to someone else in a weird way. And I think maybe awards culture made that so, you know. But you kind of always wonder, you know, if I was doing more, if I was traveling the world more, or if I was single, let's say, versus at home even all the time and just doing adventurous things, would I have a different end result in my work? And I think it's kind of ridiculous. And I think, you know what, I think you have like a really good point that all the best ideas just come from like well-observed truths about your own life, and usually are nothing spectacular. So yeah, just show up, honestly.
Yeah.
Bags, this is where I go. That's the end, Jason.
Jason. That's the end, Jason, to everyone out there.
You've just listened to an extremely abridged version of this interview. To listen to the full uncut interviews, many of which are 2 to 3 hours long, go to schoolofastonishingpursuits.com and check out the ASAP coaching and mentorship programs. If you're accepted, you will receive personal mentorship from some of the most award-winning advertising pros in the world who ran places like Widening Kennedy and BBH. You'll learn the secrets and techniques to doing the best work of your life. Through on-demand lessons and live Q&As with your coach, you'll learn exactly how they created famous campaigns for brands like Old Spice, Nike, KFC, Xbox, and more. Class sizes are extremely limited and do sell out, so get your application in ASAP. See what I did there? And as a bonus, you'll get access to the complete library of uncut episodes of Bagley Talks to an Important Person.
Yes, it's Jason Bagley's podcast, baby. You better get out your notebook and your pen. He'll interview a motherfucking important person. God damn it, I did it again. It's Jason's podcast. Here we go.